weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Well, D.E. Vagas Falci, good game on. Erdus, Guramila Malguiv, the two Johnnies August Africa on Spree Tronona. In you, the Cadine Sheo Martha is Mishish, Shane Dawson August Tatu, Eichstock, the game on, 2FM. Coming up between now and 7 p.m, David Snaid chats Champions League, Lee Carsley, and League of Ireland. Nadine Doherty reviews and previews on the latest Ladies Football League action. Damien Lawler brings us the latest Gaelic Games news stories, including a fascinating chat with legendary Tyrone Gael, Benny Hurl. We'll also hear from Keane Healy as we edge closer to Ireland's Six Nations clash with England this weekend. And we'll hear from Rashida Adeleke in what could be an historic year for the Irish sprinter. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Hello there, welcome along to Game On. D'Eve, David Snaid, August Nadine Doherty, Seachtain na Gaeilge, Conas Tatu. Perfect. Fearful, as they say.
That wasn't even planned. We just did that off the cuff.
Off the cuff.
Live radio. You know, that's why.
On a cliche, David.
All right, no more. That's it. Couple of fuck off. How are you? Anyway, you're keeping well. We are chatting ladies football a little bit later on. Nadine, we're chatting soccer very shortly, David. But first, it is competition time. We here at Game On are teaming up with Dove Men Plus Care to give away some fantastic prizes across the week. This is your chance to get your hands on Dove Advanced Deodorant, designed to be tough on sweat, not on skin, with a daily prize of a gift hamper packed full of Dove Men's Deodorant and Body Wash. Plus, on Friday, we'll put all of our daily winners in a draw for a chance to win our ultimate prize to see the team you support with an epic 1,500 euro sports package from Dove that you can put towards your match tickets, hotel stay, and indeed spending money. So, for a chance to win today's Dove Men hamper and get your name in the draw for that brilliant sports package prize, all you've got to do is tell us the answer to this question. Paul O'Connell played rugby for which Irish province? Text the word Dove, your answer, name and email address to 51552 right now, and we'll announce the winner before the end of the show. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for all of the details. Now, as I mentioned in the intro, it is going to hopefully be a big, big year for Irish athletics. And after the fine fifth place finish of the Irish women's 4x400 metre relay at the World Indoor Championships last Sunday, one woman missing from that squad due to a minor injury setback is Rashida Adeleke. She was speaking today about how she admired what the team did in Glasgow and how her ambition to be part of the squad at both the World Relay Championships in May and indeed the European Championships in June, and all geared towards qualifying for that big event in the summer, the Paris Olympics.
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing to see the girls do so well. And hopefully when we go out and run the relay again, we can hopefully continue to keep that tradition going, making finals, and hopefully we can get into even medal caliber. That would be the main goal.
So the World Relay Championships are on in May. And are you going to be part of that, do you think?
Yeah, hopefully. That's one of our opportunities to qualify as a team. So I definitely would love to contribute to that.
And that's obviously with the Olympics in mind. And what's the plan at the moment for the European Championships and the Olympics?
Yeah.
The European Championships are early in June. Are they still on your radar?
Yeah, definitely. I think it would be a good opportunity to go to Europeans. You know, things can change, but they're definitely on the radar.
Well, here's hoping all the best for Rashida Adeleke. Interestingly enough, we'll actually be speaking to Kieran McGean on tomorrow's Game On, so do stay tuned for that. And hopefully it is a great summer for all of Team Ireland. But first, on the agenda this evening is soccer with David Snaid. David, Champions League, League of Ireland to get through. But first, you had a story on the 42.ie yesterday. And Brian Kerr has backed you up on the Ray Darcy show earlier on this afternoon on RT Radio 1. So your story surrounded that it is unlikely now that this management saga drags on, some might say. But Lee Carsley is not expected to be the next permanent Ireland manager.
Yeah, and like I suppose like the other reason, it was funny when the story went up, you see online, it's a combination of like anger and boredom with some Ireland fans now, because some fans don't want to hear it, and then some fans are just like, just tell us who the manager's going to be.
Do you have the answer for us?
No, that's the truth is that was the thing, is like, your Sergeant yesterday going through and making calls on this and speaking to people about the Carsley situation was, and the only reason being is because of how the FAI have handled this, with obviously the interim appointment of John O'Shea for the two friendlies this month, and then obviously in the same statement last week saying that they're going to have the permanent appointment confirmed in early April. And then obviously John O'Shea's press conference on Monday, when he's unveiled, Mark Cannon, the director of football, is talking about, well, yeah, this successor will be, for Stephen Kenny, permanent successor will be confirmed in early April, and the reason why he haven't announced it yet is due to contractual obligations of that person. Now, the reason why Lee Carsley then came back into the fold, and understandably for most people then, was because, well, he is taking charge of two games for England's under-21s later on this month as well, around the same time as when Ireland are playing the friendlies with Belgium and Switzerland. And then they have a bit of a break. They don't play again then until September. So the thinking, understandably, in some quarters was, well, he has been their number one target all along since they made the decision to not renew Stephen Kenny's contract. So it's clear that if they've gone back for an interim appointment and are holding off again, well, what's in this is Lee Carsley back in the mix. And when I was making calls on this yesterday and just speaking to different people about it, that's the angle I was chasing here. Not that he's ruled out that is he back in here now. And in pretty emphatic terms, it was supposed to be that, no, this isn't going to be the case. Like, and it's an interesting one how this has even played out, even with Lee Carsley and with the FAI and the English FA, that, like, it's not a case that when the FAI would have made contact with Lee Carsley originally and spoke to him about the job, and basically that if he had wanted it by now, I would have assumed that he would be the Ireland manager. It's not as if that's the case, that the English FA hadn't an idea of what's going on. Like, it's been made very clear to me that throughout the whole process, it's been very upfront between the FAI, Lee Carsley and the FA of what's been going on. And likewise, on the back of how this has all happened over the last week or so, not that they needed reassurances, but there was conversations have happened again between Lee Carsley and the English FA about, well, what's happening. And as it was made clear to me, he's reaffirmed his commitment to staying with the English FA, which would then say, what Brian Kerr was talking about today in that interview, where he's saying that he wouldn't expect Lee Carsley to be the manager. So very kind of him to actually support the back of that story. Because it always helps. But it's interesting. I try not to look at it on social media, but then you see some of the reaction to when we put the story out on the 42, and even just on the site itself, people commenting on it, and then online as well, and it's like there's a bit of anger there almost, saying, well, what's the point of going back, if he doesn't want the job, why is his name even discussed? People are almost expecting, as if, I just find it a little bit, you kind of get the sense that people had obviously got that level of excitement about, well, who's going to be the new manager, and the longer it goes on a little bit,
it's fatigue.
Yeah, like, that is
it's mental
that,
fatigue that, trying to even
that is it, yeah. And also as well, if you consider it from the point of view of even from like having the interim boss in charge and giving it to John O'Shea, someone who has like so much respect throughout Ireland for what he's done as a player with obviously for over 100 caps for Ireland, what he's did for Manchester United and the career he had in the Premier League. And then you see the kind of unit that he was putting together, and obviously hand in hand with the FAI, because obviously it came out that it was Mark Cannon's suggestion really to John O'Shea to have Brian Kerr come back in as a technical advisor, because it was John O'Shea is obviously, he wanted Paddy McCarthy to come in as his right hand man. Like, that's someone who, like, it's interesting, like, Paddy McCarthy wouldn't be a high profile person in terms of what he did as a player for a lot of Irish supporters, even though he captained at 21 level. I think he was in a couple of squads at Crystal Palace, but he's held in such high regard at Crystal Palace, and as a coach coming through their academy, their 23s, has been involved, first team caretaker in the Premier League. He's obviously worked under Roy Hodgson, worked with Patrick Vieira, is now working with their new manager there as well since he's come in. Like, he's very highly regarded and has that calibre of being involved in the Premier League for the last number of seasons. You tie that in with someone like Glenn Whelan, again, like, maybe a bit of a manly figure for some.
Cult hero.
Yeah, cult hero for some. Not for Eamon Dunphy. But then just as that, would have that respect instantly walking into a dressing room of an international player.
Yeah.
Of what he's done, and also in terms of the career he's had in the Premier League, and just that force of personality. And then you see that unit then that John O'Shea is building. You're kind of thinking, if the FAI hadn't have been so adamant, and maybe it's right that they are being upfront about this, you know, very grown up about it and saying, well, we have someone coming in, we know who it is. Because if you look at what kind of is being put together, if it is the kind of gel and works, it's a kind of unit that would be very hard to dismantle kind of without good reason. So you'd like to think...
Could that come back in the FAI then? That they've already said that...
Everything can. It'll all come down to results, I suppose. But then that's where the FAI have to be... That's where the FAI and Mark Cannon... That's his job. He's the one who obviously has to be the one who's overseeing this and laying out the vision and what he wants, where he wants Irish football to go. So he sees it in the short term that it, where he sees it is now obviously with John O'Shea and the staff that are in place. Like, I don't think anybody has any concerns about the professionalism of that group of people who are going to be in charge for those two games. It's not as if it's like it's friendlies at a time of the year where there's a lot going on in league seasons and stuff, but there'll be people who'll have demands on that group of players. But it's going to be it kind of almost the emphasis again, not that it was never there, of making sure that the appointment comes in. Not that it has to be like a sexy one and like something that you do it just for the sake of getting a few headlines and people talking about like the PR side of things. It has to be someone who has a bit of weight behind them. Do you know what I mean? Like an appointment who comes in and might not just, let's be honest, where we are. Like we've said this from day one. People said about Lee Carsley again, you know, is it a risk going to Lee Carsley? I've kind of said this numerous times, but like, or we're the risk here. Ireland, this job is the risk for a coach, a young coach. He's turned 50, like he's been around the game a long time, but like people are talking maybe does have to be a young coach emerging, but like, this it's the kind of job that you could get bogged down by as well. Do you know what I mean? It's gonna need someone to come in and be able to have that force of personality as well as the kind of credentials as a coach and as a manager and a person to go and deliver. And it seems to be that right mix in terms of in the interim, and that's why now it's gonna be very interesting afterwards then over the next little while to try and suss out who the actual permanent manager is gonna be.
Yeah, a poison chalice to some, perhaps.
That's how it can be viewed. Some might view it that way, but like maybe if you look at obviously how the last couple of years have gone and the overhaul of the squad, that's why I don't think it should be viewed that way. You know, obviously some of those players will be low on confidence in terms of what's happened over the last little while internationally and stuff, but there's still the swing of an emerging team there, and like something that obviously Stephen Kenny will hopefully be able to look back on and take great credit from in the future in terms of having that legacy. But like Anton, with players, the onus is also on them to go on in their own club career to emerge and stay at that level to remain an international player, because it's just the nature of international football as well. There's always that kind of fluctuation where you'll have fellas coming through, obviously you'll have late bloomers coming in, like the likes of say of Sam Smodics at Blackburn, who Hingo Shea was speaking about today, possibly coming in as a fresh face. He'd been around squads, he's top scorer in the championship, 20 odd goals for Blackburn Rovers, and I know obviously he qualifies for Hungary, who Ireland play in one of the friendlies.
Sammy Smodics derby,
yeah, I've seen that quote alright, yeah. And so it's, but you're always going to have that nature, so it's not like a poison chalice, and that's hopefully some of the thinking that needs to kind of dissipate a little bit.
Be less downbeat, Shane. That's what you're saying, David.
No, don't get me wrong. The manager coming in is going to have pressure internally to just hopefully be able to regroup what's being there, because obviously how the nature of the last campaign kind of tapered off at the end of Stephen Kenny's era, when you were hoping that it could have been that one where things did kick off and it just didn't materialise. So it's obviously going to be an extremely tough job, and it's coming from a low ebb, but there's still enough quality in there to be able to be kind of optimistic about it as well.
Just to clarify, I did say Brian Kerr alluded to that it wouldn't be Lee Carsley. He didn't 100% say it wouldn't be. He said, I'd be surprised if Lee was back in the frame. Speaking to the Ray Darcy show earlier today, Lee played when I was manager, and I've been in touch with Lee a bit, and I'd be surprised. Unfortunately, I don't think that he's in the picture, but I could be wrong. Mark Kahneman and Jonathan Hill have been doing the work on this, along with Paddy Bonner, have kept things close to themselves, so it wasn't an exclusive of Brian saying it's not going to
be. And that's the truth of it as well, in terms of it's not as if a lot of stuff has been coming from the FAI here where
nothing is black and white in this managerial
but even in
terms
of, like, sometimes you might get a sense of they throw names out and it's like to see how it sticks, how people react to it and stuff, and obviously some people weren't happy when Neil Lennon's name was floated, but like he applied for the job, his credentials warranted an interview. He got to a certain point. The FAI, why are they supposed to just ignore him? Because
but they
he's
need
not
to back themselves if they're going, they're the ones making the decision, and yes, okay, you do have to take in commercial factors, if he was perhaps sponsorship factors, if there was a pushback from Irish fans on a point, not just Neil Lennon or whoever the appointment is,
But at the same time, it is them that have to back themselves that they're going to make a decision. Yeah. And they seem to have, they do have someone in mind, whoever that man or woman may be.
And that's where it's coming from. It's coming from the point as well of part of the reason we say, obviously Chris Coleman was another name who was mentioned. I know Slaven Bilic, that was a name.
Where did he come from?
Croatia.
Well, I wish I had a badum-ching thing here. But in terms of the name, it's just you're throwing, a New Zealand manager was interviewed as well.
Anthony Hudson, yeah. Well, that was my colleague. Again, this is one of the few things that come with my colleague Gavin Cooney. He was the one who kind of wrote that name out of nowhere. Do you know what I mean? And this is the thing, like even in the background, and it's not to a sense of subterfuge about this. Like, don't get me wrong, you're speaking to people in the background, you're hearing little bits and you're trying to stand stuff up, and don't get me wrong, you can't say every name you're hearing because you can't kind of determine that absolutely that person was spoken to for the job.
Yeah.
But with some of the stuff that's gone on, I think where some of the confusion came from was they saw, say, someone like Lee Carsley being the number one target for the job.
Yeah.
And then Neil Lennon is there, and those profiles of people, managers, don't really correlate. So that's where some of the confusion was coming from. I was like, well, hold on, like why is someone like Lee Carsley being spoken to, someone who's very technical, being kind of prominent in youth football and developing the players and very successful with England under 21s and a seasoned international who knows the game inside out, but then say a Coleman and a Carsley who aren't that type of figure, maybe a Bilic isn't quite that type of figure. And then again, similar, when I went looking into that and speaking to people who would be close to Bilic, it was made clear, no, that's not, at the moment, it's not a non-runner from the point of view of the FAI having contacted him. It's not to say that he wouldn't be interested down the line. You never know, especially in football, like things can change. But that's been the kind of the sense that I've got from this, is that it is the FAI looking for someone who is that head coach figure, working within the kind of parameters within the FAI. Because if you look at what happened with the women's job, with obviously Vera Depeau losing her job, and that was made clear that at that point Vera Depeau was almost seen as an outlier in association, as that she could go do her own thing, had tremendous success.
Yeah.
But how they viewed it of going forward to have sustained success over a prolonged period and not just maybe sporadically, which is what we've only really had in the men's game as well, as little moments here and there, that you need to have proper structures throughout. It's even little things, and this is probably boring, but it's probably important for people listening who are involved in Irish football and understand it. Like, even little things now where medical staff, instead of coming in, like what would have happened with Stephen Kenny, where it would have been a big overhaul of staff, and like almost a club level where the manager brings all the people in with him and will bring certain people. That's now getting changed, whereby it's all going to be kind of done where, yeah, you'll have a manager coming in and you'll have his coach beside him or his assistant and stuff, but all the structures around that
will be centralised,
and it's going to be done through the FAI, and it's going to be, now some issues are still there in terms of roles that should be full time and are going to be part time. They still have other positions, like to be people working in the FAI who work in the League of Ireland and stuff like that, but it's not going to be right, a manager in for a couple of years and then the whole structure beneath them changes. So stuff like that seems like the most obvious thing and a bit of cop on, but it's been needed.
It's something that's been lacking. Exactly. And it is important to have it. And all the names that are being thrown out. And Vladimir Petkovic was one recently, took up a job at Algeria. Every now,
I'm just going to take these down so we can just go through.
Well, I'm naming these guys, and it will lead us on to our Champions League chat, because Anthony Barry, of course, is with Thomas Tuchel, who will be leaving Bayern.
He was linked with it as well, of course.
So, doing all your research, this is your bread and butter, David. This is your day job.
Who? Anthony Barry.
Who? Would he be, in your opinion, the leading contender at the moment?
No.
Or no,
I don't think it's going to be him. I think the sense is that, obviously with Tuchel, he's been in there with him for a while. He's obviously going to be going to the Euros of Portugal. He's got...
Yeah.
And Portugal could be one of the favourites for the Euros as well.
So are we thinking then that this is someone out of contract, or it's someone that needs to see his contract out and give notice to his current employer?
That's my sense of it at the moment, yeah.
Would be the latter?
Yeah.
Okay.
But again, you're speaking to people, and there's versions of the truth from different people, do you know what I mean? Like, again, like for example, for yesterday, I'm starting off the day and I'm getting sound on this could be happening, and then by the end of it, it's as clear as day that it's not, do you know? So in football, things can change, and I'll be honest, unless they have a personally, and this is not like, listen, I don't know what happened in football, things shift so quickly and things can change so quickly that you're saying you have something lined up. Like, in my head, I'm thinking there must be a pre-contract here signed. because unless you can actually have that and have it nailed down, you never know.
It was a very bold statement.
Yeah, like, and like, they've kind of already hung their hat out a little bit, where I remember CEO Jonathan Hill kind of said that we didn't give a definitive date. Like, they've even said early April, where they said they wanted someone in place.
Technically,
they
didn't have
the
have a year in the statement. I'd like to point that one out as well. It said April, but
yeah,
however.
Yeah, but like, so you would think if they're being that definitive that they've definitely got that person. And this is where, as well, and maybe it's maybe a bold, brave new world within the FA, the fact that it hasn't leaked out. Maybe that's a good thing.
Absolutely. Well, 51552.
Not for Moyetta, it's not a good thing.
Well, for transparency and for this is the new FAI. This is the this part of the pathway system from the top down.
New FAI, just recently up in front of your Oireachtas, but yes, the new FAI, yeah.
Reform. A texter says, no name given to the text, says it's going to be Gus Poyet. He's out of contract on March 31st. No name. That could be Jonathan Hill, for all we know, David, texting into the show. Antonio Conte, Jose Mourinho are both out of work, so maybe it's one of them, says Ronan on the road.
What I would say to them is just Google FAI salary job for this, and you'll see that those managers will not be getting the Ireland job.
Well,
but, like, the Gus Poyet one, like, Gus Poyet spoken about this. He said he's as close to kind of fluttering your eyelashes as you can get for it, but had been no kind. That was when was that? That was would have been maybe a few weeks ago now. He did a promotional gig and spoke to the Irish media, and he had said that there'd be no contact with the FAI. Yeah, obviously Greece are involved in the playoffs, so his contract are finished up. But obviously if they
The mats are right.
Yeah, I know. Sadly, haven't got his number. I don't know. But I don't think that fits. I don't think it fits the mold of what they're looking for here in terms of that kind of head coach type figure who will be kind of part of. But I'll be honest, you look at it in terms of someone who, I said this, like, it's something about. There is something about him when you see him in, or when you're chatting to him in a room. Obviously, with the Ireland stuff, when he was obviously involved when coming over in a press conference and. Like, you can understand why players kind of give so much for him, because he's a very commanding figure, you know?
Absolutely. We have run out of road, but a really interesting chat there. Manchester City hosting Copenhagen this evening. They have a 3-1 aggregate lead in the Champions League. Real Madrid should, on paper, you would expect them to be RB Leipzig 1-0 up on aggregate as well. Just very, very briefly before we do take a break, David, St. Pat's announcing that US-based Kenosis Sports Group, which counts NFL star Joe Flacco among its investors, has become a strategic investor in the League of Ireland club. Pat's didn't disclose the level of investment from the subsidiary of Kenosis Capital, an American financial advisory and private equity firm. Would you be concerned as a Pats fan, or would you be welcoming your new American investors?
Talk about him, American overlords.
I stopped myself.
I know. Like, listen, the first thing they can do, if they can put the actual shed back on the shed end, that would be a start.
That
will be a start. But no, there is, don't get me wrong. I don't know, you see what's happening with Drogheda this week as well, with their investors again, American firm, who obviously they're involved with
taking ownership of
Weavers Park, yeah. And they're also talking about having a ground elsewhere and moving, like, which is probably needed in the sense of, like, bringing the club on. That's a kind of foresight, and that's a kind of ambition you want. Don't get me wrong, like, Pats have looked at that in the past with wanting to move stadiums, where Gareth Kelleher had tried to have this plan to move across the road, essentially, and move in as part of the regeneration of St. Michael's estate and part of the social housing and the social kind of development there. And unfortunately, that didn't materialise. So I would say the majority of fans, and maybe just this is only just anecdotally, they're not looking saying, oh, we want someone to come in and throw a lot of money at the first team. And, like, I think a lot, some of that kind of thinking now is changing. It's wanting to come in and just be sustainable and actually be able to benefit the club on and off the pitch, you know.
Absolutely. Well, due to increased demand, part of the, in inverted commas, shed end terrace will be open to home supporters for Friday's game against Dundalk. St. Pat's tweeted just before we came on air, access will be via the Camac Terrace, those who want to watch the game from the shed end. I do enjoy the way it's still called the shed end. Should a new stand at Tulka Park still the new stand, and it's condemned at the moment, so... Greatest league in the world. David Snaith, thank you very much for popping in to chat. We will be chatting to Nadine Doherty, Damien Lawler, and we'll hear from Keane Healy after the break. Stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
Game On Rugby.
Now we are edging closer to Ireland, England in the Six Nations as Ireland look for that grand slam. However, Ireland's Keane Healy is just taking it game by game.
It's important that everyone stays queued up on that, and we are. We're being kept in check and kept on the right track, and everyone has done as well as the mental work to stick to the one game plan and each game as it is. So we play the next game, and after that we deal with the one after. So I think it's about nailing all the structures, defence, all that, and putting together a serious performance for this weekend. And after that, we're on.
Is that something that you've spoken about, or as a group, or like, do you see, as if you almost have a mentor role, if you understand what I mean, with maybe some of the younger players who haven't experienced this before?
No, there will be group chat about it, and group chat about not getting ahead of ourselves. And I don't know, I guess that's a given in sport, that you stay next game focused and you look after yourself with regards to that, because getting too far ahead of yourself is a really easy way to mess up.
A game against England this coming weekend, I mean, it's massive, isn't it, to go there to play them in their own backyard against a team who everybody over there is complaining about how poor they are, yet they've done well in their game so far.
Yeah, they've gone well. It's a great place to go and play. Great energy in the stadium, great energy on the way into the stadium. It's something we're just going to have to feed off and bring an edge to our game with that. I think everyone's excited for that challenge ahead.
And that's something, as you say, you can feed off that, can't you? You can use that energy, even if it's negative energy from away fans, you can turn it into something positive for you.
Noise is noise at that point, and it's a stadium full of energy that's you don't know who's cheering for who at one point. Like, it's just get up and go, and you know, big moments, it starts getting louder, the energy builds, and how you lean into that is the most important thing. If you feed off that, or if you go into your shell.
The energy level, Cian, has to be really good this week, doesn't it? Because they're going to challenge you massively physically up front at the breakdown, line out, that whole, it's easy for me standing there talking about it.
Yeah, I think they are going to challenge, but I think what our plan should be to now would be to challenge them to deal with us and how we assert our game on them and how well we can perform any of our structure, any of our attack, any of our defence, and how they can figure their way through that.
So, I mean, as a group, you've played three. As a collective group, you've won the three. But I would reckon Saturday is probably going to have to be the best performance of the ones that you've played so far.
Yeah, next game always has to be the best, Corky. That's the way it is. There has to be improvements. You have to figure stuff out from the previous weeks. And we have. We had a lot to take from that Welsh game and where we can improve, what we can build on. And there were some fix-ups last week. We trained against the 20s. Then this week we trained against ourselves. And tomorrow night we'll have a final day of training that we can really put it all together.
Those training sessions amongst the squad that's there, I mean, they must be fiercely contested, are they?
Yeah, they are and they aren't. They are in a sense that there's a lot of pressure and a lot of detail going into it. But there has to be the respectful level on contact or running through carries and... So everyone has to kind of look after each other a little bit as well.
Just a final question from your own point of view, considering where you could have gone a couple of years ago. I mean, you didn't know whether you were going to continue on or otherwise. You're still living the dream, I would imagine.
Yeah, loving it. It's an enjoyable journey to be on, and just trying to keep it going.
Game on.
GAA.
Now, joining us is RTE GA reporter Damien Lawler with the latest Gaelic Games news stories. And Damien, let us dive straight in. And I'm going to put a sentence here that I didn't think that I would be saying at the start of this year. And that is, Down coach Marty Clark is in line to make his return to the inter-county playing fold 13 years after his last appearance for the Mourne men. Damien, what is happening?
Yeah, it's unbelievable news, really. And then if you delve a bit closer to it, it does make a little bit of sense. They are having in Down something of a goalkeeping conundrum in the last little while. But as you say, Marty Clark has not played for his county since, I think, 2011, Shane. 13 years ago, basically. Yeah. And look, Marty Clark would have been a prodigy coming up through the ranks in GEA. He would have been part of that Down team that got to the All-Ireland final. Probably would have massive regrets that they didn't get over the line on that day, but certainly has never held him back in his AFL career. Before and after that All-Ireland final, he impressed over there in the AFL with Collingwood as well. So Marty's come back over the years. He had to retire prematurely from contact sport and from GEA with a condition called Addison's disease, which, you know, remember recovering that at the time, which I can't believe it's 11 years ago, but he played his last game for Down then. And in the preceding years then, Shane, no doubt about the work that he's done with maybe underage teams and down. I think he's been involved with club teams as well, coaching. But I would have come across him frequently enough as a media analyst, and he's absolutely top class. And would have, you know, various organisations would have worked with him. Great man to read a game and understands the media side of things too. Most recently then would have come across him as coach with Down, you know, in last year's Talton Cup final. Probably was the low point for them, but getting there was good, and they had a win in the Ulster Championship as well. So I think he was definitely retained as part of the Down coaching ticket. They brought in new blood as well in terms of the coaching set up, but he was definitely going to be a key part of it. And I think, you know, this season to last season, Niall O'Kane, the regular goalkeeper, is gone. John O'Hare is in there at the moment. I think John O'Hare is going quite well, and Kevin Anderson is a backup to him. And interestingly enough, Kevin was on that Down squad in 2010 that Marty was on. So that's the current duo at the moment. But Niall O'Kane is missing. Charlie Smith is waiting for word of an NFL contract, Shane, and we might talk about that later on. And I think with Marty's coaching background, and he's playing club football in goals, I think the manager just has made a decision to bring him in. And and they've obviously tried it in training, and it's really a development that's taken us all by surprise, but it does make a little bit of sense as well. Sweeper keeper is the role that they have in mind, Shane, and I think that's where his coaching background will come into play. And I think he's impressed him with his quality of restarts and his experience. And I suppose if he was being used, he'd almost be like a coach on the pitch as well. And you know, we saw there with David O'Hanlon, the Dublin goalkeeper, the save he had to make against Derry last weekend. But like, a lot of the time, goalkeepers are not under instant pressure to make saves. The role and dynamic of that position has changed completely. So Marty Clark is back against all the odds.
You mentioned even Kevin Anderson back in the panel. He was an outfielder in 2010 when he was on the panel. And like, this sweeper keeper, like Niall Morgan, Eton Rafferty, Colm Reap even... is this the route that we're going to go down more? Like, are we stepping away, I suppose, is my question, from the traditional goalkeeper? Like, is John O'Hare not going to get the hump here? That O'Hanlon save, that's from a specialist. The goalkeeper role is a specialist position that should be protected, surely, as opposed to trying to evaporate that and then evolve it into something completely different in Gaelic football.
So, you know, and by the way, John will probably expect to keep his place, I'm sure about that. So there probably will be, maybe he's there initially as a backup and see what happens from there. To answer your question, the way Gaelic football had gone, goalkeepers were, I won't say unemployed, but they were redundant for parts of the game. And kickouts, short kickouts, getting the ball away quickly, shooting into the I suppose... watching your team set up in a central spine down the field and shooting left or right. And, you know, I think Cluxton Aulis had an unbelievable ability years back to find Shane Ryan on the run with a bounce, the ball bouncing into his hand. You couldn't script that. And Cluxton used to practice with place an extra weight on the ball to kind of give himself a benefit or an edge on match days. The ball would whiz quicker for him. So to answer your question, the way Gaelic football is styled at the moment, It's mass defence versus mass defence. It's only in the last year or two that the transition has really quickened up. And I think people are trying to play football again. The reason that the sweeper keepers came into play would have been to try and punch a hole in the opposition armoury. Running off the shoulder, Eton Rafferty probably does the best going forward, in my opinion, in terms of scoring power. But we've seen all sorts of goalkeepers do it. I saw a nay CBS goalkeeper, Charlie Carroll, do it only a few weeks ago, and it's filtered right down to club level. So I would feel that unless the game continues to evolve back towards quick counter-attacking and quick transitioning, and unless Jim Gavin's new football group committee issue recommendations that the opposition has to hold two or three men inside the opposition half at all times, well then really keeper has to stay home and be honest. But until that happens, I think the goalkeeper is going to come out. It's going to offer another body outfield. Some of them like to trail down the wings, but others like to get centrally involved, stand in midfield for the opposition kick out, retreat then, depending on who wins the ball. But at the point of attack, come on board at the last minute, an off the shoulder run. You know, and I think it's been done to good effect. Certainly the role of traditional goalkeepers is unrecognisable to what it once was. It once was a big hoof down the field and shot-stopping ability. And now it's completely reversed. It's restart ability, it's distribution, it's offering a position in attack. It's probably manning against the opposition kick-out, and then it's shot-stopping. You know, so a lot of outfield guys have been converted. You see that at club level everywhere. So, yeah, the role is going to be changed, Shane. The role is changed until we see further change coming. That will either come through the transitioning that coaches are currently working on or recommendations that Jim Gavin's workgroup may make.
Yeah, no, you are banging the money. Although I think I'll be writing a strongly worded letter to Jim and his merry men to protect the traditional goalkeeper. Listen, Damien, staying in Ulster, Benny Hurl, a man who has seen it all. He recently led Ulster of University, of course, to the Sigerson Cup. He's a member of the GA's Ard Corle and represents Tyrone at central council level. You spoke to him recently, and we're going to hear a couple of clips now, but he's kind of airing some grave concerns, Damien.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, he spoke up at Congress, and he, you know, Benny's a force to be reckoned with. As you say, Sigerson Cup manager, just success there a few weeks ago, member of Orcola, Central Council delegate, as you said, Shane. Mm. And he stood up at Congress and he spoke about the runaway train that was the intercounty costs. But he said about, you know, he spoke about that seeping down to club level, and he raised his huge concerns at that. He referenced a book written by John Healy about Charlestown and County Mayo some time ago. That book was called No One Shouted Stop. And as we're going to hear now, Shane, Benny is quite concerned at the direction that cost at club level have taken and will continue to take. And he reckons that they could match the cost and expenditure levels of a county, as we're going to hear now.
The intercounty game is now referred to as a runaway train. But one of the issues is that we all want to be the best, and we are happy to keep throwing money at it. Coaches and managers move from one place to another, and their loyalty to their team lasts until they move on to the next team. By the way, this isn't a criticism of managers or people in the circuit. It's an industry now. Finding all the money to prepare teams is a race to the top or the bottom, depending on your perspective. Clubs also are trying to create high-performance environments of their own. And integration is fast approaching, and more money will be needed to propel this super train along. Back in the day, it was training on Tuesday, Thursday, a game on a Sunday. Now training is 4, 5, 6 times a week. Backroom teams have grown from 5 to 25. So it's becoming more difficult to claim that we're an amateur organisation.
Now, Damien, in your interview with Benny, he refers to an amateur status committee being established by Jarlett Burns, and it's going to be chaired by David Hassan. And he welcomes that development, to be fair. But I suppose, from my point of view, like I'd be very curious to see what it means. And before I get your thoughts, Damien, let's hear from Benny Hurl again.
One of the proposals is the granting to counties of a licence to play if counties sign up to the conditions. It seems to me, however, that bringing a licence-based system from professional sport into what is supposed to be an amateur sport to stop the amateur one from becoming even more professional will be very challenging for us. Our experience during COVID proved that. Our amateur ethos is under pressure and parts of it have been eroded, but we just might have to accept that things have changed and changed utterly.
So very interesting comments, to be fair, from Benny Hurl there, airing those concerns. And I wonder what the outcome of this is going to be, Damien.
Yeah, so I'd say the chair that Jarlett is talking about, the Amateur Status Committee, is going to be chaired by the committee that Jarlett Burns is talking about is going to be chaired by David Hassan. And I think, you know, Benny's talking about a licence possibly coming into play here. He'd mean by that, I think, conditions would have to be met before a team was given a licence to play. And that might mean a certain amount of training sessions per week, you know, rolling over from pre-season to league to a championship, to increasing all the time. How much miles a player is expected to cover to train for his side, the amount of backroom staff. So central enough to the template that that was in operation during COVID. I think Benny's greatest concern is that we're so far down the track that something needs to happen very, very soon to keep expenditure under control, because not only are team costs rising, Shane, but county boards have never had to pay so much money for facilities and infrastructure as well as team costs at the moment. And with integration coming, which is a good thing, which has to happen. Benny's just concerned that if a roof is not put in this very, very quickly, we're in territory that the GEA cannot live with.
Damien, we began our conversation speaking about a down goalkeeper, and we are going to finish our conversation speaking about a down goalkeeper, because Charlie Smith is one of a host of Gaelic Games players trying to get a contract with the NFL. Rory Begg and Mark Jackson, the other players, of course. What is the latest? What is the situation there at the moment?
Potentially good news, Shane. All those guys were due back to Ireland this week. Rory Began was due in Croke Park on Friday night to pick up his club player award for the number one position. He's not coming back. He's going to Florida. Charlie's not coming back for the moment. He's going to Florida too. And Mark is going to Florida as well. So where are they going in Florida? They're going to the IMG training base. And why are they going to Florida? Such was the reaction to their trial last week that there's been a keen interest in the three Irish guys. When I say three, Dara Leader is there as well, but Dara's from a rugby background, so I'm not as au fait with his situation. But there's been massive interest in the three Irish guys from the scouting network over there. So they're going to Florida to remain at close proximity should any of the clubs contact them over a potential contract. I went to see them train a few weeks ago, and I remember leaving the Abbottstown at that stage, Shane, not knowing what the level of competition would be, but feeling to myself that these guys are definitely going to do really well. I would not be surprised if a contract was offered to at least one. Their kicking style, their technique was so smooth. And I think Mark Jackson's punting ability and his distance is really caught their eye. Conor McManus's composure and his technique has caught their eye. And Charlie Smith missed an early kick, but his resilience and his rhythm really impressed them as well. I think the scouts like the fact that all three are good athletes. Charlie's very young, he's only 22, but Rory and Mark have serious experience. So we're waiting, I suppose, for further news. It could happen anytime in the next 2 weeks, but the vibes are very, very good and very, very positive. And I think that them going to Florida, where there is another pro day later this month, is a really, really impressive sign. And I think the three guys did really well in interviews with the scouts before the combine trial as well, Shane.
Well, on that positive note, we will leave our conversation there. Just a word on Dara Leader, the former Connacht player. He was due to participate in punting drills on Monday, but has delayed his trials until later in the month due to a slight niggle. But for now, Damien Lawler, gentlemen, as always, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Ladies football.
Now, welcome back to Game On. It's great to have your company. Nadine Doherty is sitting across me as we are going to chat ladies football league action. Lots of chat points to talk about after, but let's just stick to the match action for the moment and reviewing a manic weekend of football. One which sees Armagh sit top of Division 1 with 5 wins from 5 matches. They defeated Kerry at home 3-14 to 1-14. And I'm just going to throw two words at you. Amy Macken.
Yeah, she's... And I know we do this all the time, and I probably get sick for this, but like comparing women to men, but like she is the day at the minute, she's the David Clifford of women's football. I mean, at the minute or at the weekend, anything she touched, it just went to gold. And it's her style of kicking, Shane, that's just so attractive to watch. And she's just so razor sharp, and she's been unmarkable so far this year. And I suppose Armagh's biggest concern would be keeping her fit for the rest of the year. Her partnership with Caroline O'Hanlon, who we spoke about last weekend, they just have this razor sharp pairing between them, and O'Hanlon knows where Amy Macken's going to be. And in fairness to Armagh, you know, they play to Amy Macken's strengths. Like, she's the kind of player who needs ball early, and that's their game plan at the minute. They're playing a lovely, lovely style of football. They kick the ball, they move it fast, they look for her straight away. She works off Kelly Mallon and other players in there, but she was just a joy to watch, Shane, at the weekend. And in fairness to Armagh, you know, I just felt overall, while it was a brilliant game of football and Kerry were top class as well, they really were, both teams made it a brilliant game, but I was just looking at Armagh, and I feel they probably have a wee bit more training behind them at the minute, because I suppose Kerry would have gone back a bit later, having made the All-Ireland final. Armagh have, I suppose, that momentum of winning Division 2 last year. But look, they're just going really well, and they're fully, fully deserving, Shane, of being top of the table by 5 points, and I couldn't give them any more credit, really. They're just improving week on week, and at the minute they do have to be favourites. Well, definitely they're making that final, but they would have to be favourites to win it. I know a lot can happen over the next few weeks, but they're looking really, really good, really sharp.
So Armagh on 15 points, Kerry on 10, Meath on 9, Dublin on 9, even Mayo still somewhat in contention on 7 points. A good win for the Dubs, 2-10 to 2-7, way to Waterford. Grinded it out somewhat.
They did, Shane, yeah. Like, it was a really good win for them. The game itself, I felt, especially in the first half, it was poor enough. There were a lot of mistakes. It was kind of stop-start. Very physical, as we'd expect from both these teams. Dublin will probably be disappointed with a lot of their ball handling skills and just that those general mistakes. But, you know, Waterford again, and I feel I say this all the time every year, I have such sympathy for them, because really they should have got a draw at least at the weekend. And I just feel for them in every year. They're so close to making that breakthrough. But I suppose their problem, I would say, is they just have 7 or 8 top players, Shane. Like, they have the Murrays, Kellyanne Hogan, Claire Walsh, Anya O'Neill, Laura McGregor. But they've no real attacking threats outside of Kellyanne Hogan and Laura McGregor. And they always play quite deep. And I think that's just the reason why they can't break through into the top six. They just always seem to fall short in the second half even of games. With Dublin, as I said, I suppose the interesting thing about Dublin, I felt at the weekend, we're probably getting closer to what their championship team will be like. Jennifer Dunn and Alwyn Carey started in midfield, likely midfield pairing for the summer with Ailish O'Dowd gone to Oz. She'd be a big loss for them. So I suppose with Dublin, we learned the most about how they'll shape up later in the summer. And Again, I mention her every week. Leah Caffrey was absolutely outstanding and was probably one of the main reasons that they ground out that win. Dubs can still make the final, depending on how things go. You know, and Kerry, that's the second week in a row they've dropped points. So in terms of that dynamic, it's still not over.
Not over just yet. And it's only just beginning for Galway. They've got their first win of the league campaign, 112 to 7 points. You've been saying this. They've been coming and they finally got their victory today.
I just felt when they got the Nicola Wards of this world back, who was absolutely outstanding there at the weekend. She just lifted the tempo of the whole team. I felt they'd beat Meath. I didn't think they'd beat them as comfortably as they did, but they had excellent performances from Shauna Haynes in the middle. She was centre forward. She scored 1-4. She's been edging towards that kind of performance, and she was excellent. And it was Meath will feel a little bit hard done by. There was a turning point, Shane, and it was only after 15 minutes, but Emma Duggan missed a really good goal chance. Galway went straight down the pitch, scored a goal of their own. The ball went back up the other side of the pitch and Meath missed the second goal chance. So that was nearly, it was like a 10-point swing nearly. And they'd look back at that and that was a huge turning point. But they just didn't have enough up front. Outside of Emma Duggan, they're very, very light in the forward line. They have a few creative players, but they are missing the Neva Sullivans and the Stacey Grimes who finished up last year. And a lot of pressure is coming on Emma Duggan's shoulders. She can take it, absolutely, but they do need more than her to really push in the later stages of the championship. They're safe. For sure, they're safe, but they're not going to make a league final. But they'll have a lot of say in the rest of the competition because they're playing a few teams in the bottom of the table, and they'll definitely have a say in what happens.
Well, one team that aren't safe, worrying times for Cork footballers. They went down at home 9 points to 7 on the Porky Cueve Astro, I believe.
Yeah. I think there was a little bit of controversy around that.
Miscommunication.
Yeah.
I think Kevin O'Donovan was responded on Twitter to say that it didn't go through the official channels to get the game in on the grass, on the main pitch, basically, and that perhaps down the line that it will be a case that the ladies footballers and camogie players will be able to avail of those facilities.
And it's just not good enough, I suppose. Yet again, you know, it wouldn't happen at men's level, but I think in terms of Astro with female players, there is a direct correlation with Astro and ACLs, and I think that's always the biggest worry for players. Also, if you're a Mayo team travelling to Cork, a lot of those girls would have just had studs, Shane, so they mightn't have had the correct footwear. You know, there's things like that. But in terms of the game, while the announcement of the 4G pitch was a disappointment, the game, it was the same. Now, it was pretty underwhelming. It was scrappy. It was real league football, to be honest. Mayo, just they ground out the win. And I suppose the difference was they just showed a bit more leadership. And I think that's what Cork are really missing at the minute. They're in huge trouble, Shane. They're searching, I would feel, especially up front, they're searching for structure. They're, you know, they were much improved defensively. They had huge numbers back, but it's just hard to see where the fluidity is going to come in their play, Shane. And, you know, they've Dublin and Meath left to play. It's very, very hard to see where a result is going to come from there. And they really are looking at Division 2 for 2025. But, you know, if that happens, they've a lot of rebuilding to do over the few weeks for the Championship. But it is worrying times for Cork. And it's disappointing because there's such a legacy there. But it's just really not going right at the minute. So.
Okay, well, hopefully they can turn it around on St. Patrick's weekend, because there's no fixtures this weekend to preview because the O'Connor Cup is on this weekend. However, over the weekend as well, Congress 2024 took place in Clare, and Trina Murray from Westmeath Emote native was voted in as the next LGFA president.
Yeah, Trina, I know Trina well. I did the LGFA Learn to Lead programme with her. She's been involved in the LGFA for a long, long time. We served on the All-Star Committee together. Great person, great football person.
Good appointment.
Great appointment, yeah. Mm. And it's great to have a woman there, of course. And she'll take over from Micheál Nochtain in Donegal next year. And Micheál is a Donegal man, Sligo man. Donegal via Sligo.
You're claiming him. We're claiming him.
We claimed him a long time ago. So it'll be lovely for Micheál to sign off in Donegal next year, Congress. But I wish Trina the best of luck. And there'll be a lot of LGFA people around the country who feel the same.
Good stuff. I did want to pick your brain on the player charter. However, we have run out of road. But very, very briefly, the International Rules Masters Series.
Yes, Masters Series is on this weekend in Charlestown Sarsfield J Club in Mayo. It's the first year that the Women's Series has been on. Test one against the Aussie Rules team is throwing at 2 p.m. So get yourself down there if you're in the locality.
Absolutely. Great stuff, Nadine Doherty. Thank you very much. Just before we go, it is time to announce the winner of our Dove competition. Paul O'Connell, of course, played for Munster. And congratulations to Paddy Ryan from Tipperary, who has just won a gift hamper packed full of Dove Men Plus Care products from deodorant to body wash. Plus, their name is now on Friday's offer, that amazing €1,500 Dove sports package. And the good news for everyone else is there's another chance to win with Dove Men Plus Care on tomorrow's show. Big thanks to John Farrell, Laura Lee Davis for working on this evening's show. Big thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in to 2FM. Do stay tuned because the brilliant Bette de Silva is up next from all at Game On. It is. Bye for now. We'll chat to you tomorrow at 6.